pretend. You were with him, Everett finished. It was... Again, she fumbled for the right words. How could she say it was a mistake when it had given her a beautiful child she loved with all her heart? She tried again. It was wrong of me to do, and wrong of me to lie to you about it after. And I'm sorry. I am so, so sorry. She willed him to look at her with understanding and forgiveness, to look at her at all, but he did not. I've been sorry every day. Her voice, hoarse with emotion, was barely audible. He kept looking at his hands. I'd like for you to leave, he said. She leaned back heavily in her chair, thrown by his unexpected request. He looked up suddenly, his gaze angry and hurt. I'm serious. I need for you to get out of here. She blinked at him a few times, but then complied, rising slowly to her feet. She started to walk into the den to collect Christopher, her mind already spinning as to where she could go. He stopped her. You can leave, Christopher. I'll put him to bed. I just need for you to not be in this house for a few hours. You owe me that, at least. She started to go tell her son goodbye, but he stopped her. Don't stir things up with him. He hasn't even realized you're back, so better just to go. He looked at her, his eyes pleading. Please. With the briefest of nods, she scooped up her purse and keys where she'd dropped them earlier. She paused at the door to look at him, still sitting at their kitchen table. She started to speak, to apologize one more time, but he rose and walked into the den, turning his back on her as he joined the son he once thought was his own. Everett listened for Bright's car to start up and back out of the driveway, but he never heard the sound of the engine. He got up and went to the window to see her walking toward Myrtle Honeycutt's house, her shoulders hunched forward, her head down, her steps deliberate. She was still going to walk that damn dog, even with everything else going on. He watched until she disappeared from sight, then went to put the boy to bed. Could he call him his son still? He didn't know if he could stop. The thought of admitting that child wasn't his nearly brought him to his knees, but he forced himself to keep moving. After Christopher was tucked in with his stuffed elephant and his five kisses, forehead, chin, cheek, other cheek, nose, Everett sat in the darkening house, not bothering to turn on the lights. He thought of his wife, gone for several hours now. In the distance, he heard sirens and wondered idly what might be happening. He wondered if he should worry, but he couldn't consider another tragedy just then. He wanted to be angry at her. The baser parts of him wanted to divorce her, deny the child and start over. Declare the bright years a false start. He'd get it right next time. He cataloged in his mind what it would take to separate their lives. He was a math guy, but he could not estimate the cost. He'd always made sense of things, but nothing made sense anymore. He could not be angry at her, because she was not the only one who'd kept a damaging secret. An image came to mind of him and Jency as inexperienced teenagers, hunkered at a corner table of the town library in late winter of their junior year. He'd said they needed to research sex before they did it, so they'd know how, and she'd gone along with his plan. They'd taken books off the shelf and sat side by side, elbows touching at the most remote table, her eyes taking in the words and pictures along with him, two bright spots of color on her cheek in the too warm library. Under the table, he'd reached for her hand. She'd taken his, and he'd known that it was as close to real love as he'd ever find. That one winter afternoon in the overheated recesses of the town library was what had driven him to find Jency before he could propose to Bright. He'd tracked her down, living in Connecticut with a husband and two children. He'd called her, told her he would be in New York and wasn't that close to Connecticut, playing dumb. She'd said she could get away, that it would be nice to see him. He'd met her in a restaurant in the city, and they'd had a long dinner, catching up and drinking stiff drinks until they were both just shy of shit-faced. At the end of the night, she'd looked at him and asked why he was really there. He'd never lied to her before, and he didn't intend to start. So he said nothing. He signaled the waiter for the check, paid the bill, and reached for her hand. Surprisingly, she didn't argue. She just took his hand and let him lead her to his car, a rental. He turned on the heat in the car, tuning the radio to a decent station. "Are you ever going to answer my question?" she asked. He looked at her, and that was all the answer she needed. "I'm sorry," she said, "for never coming back." "I had to know it was really over," he laughed at himself. "I mean, of course I know it's over, but seeing you makes it real." She started to cry, tucking her head into her chest. "Yes," she said. "I have a family now." "I wanted a family," he said, "with you." "I know," she said. "I thought that was what you wanted too." He hated the way he sounded, whiny and clingy, but it was how he felt, and he would probably never see her again. He needed to say it before he moved on. "I did." She gripped his forearm, trying to catch his eye. "You have to believe I did. But then everything happened, and I just had to get away." "You said you'd come back." He felt anger building up inside of him. Anger at her, anger at the stalker, anger at himself for not stopping her. He thought of the hazy days after the attack, the shame and pain all mixed together. He was weak. He had failed to protect her, and Jency had left because of it. "I never meant for this to happen," she said. "It all got away from me, I swear." It had all gotten away from him, too. He kissed her then, because he believed her, and because he thought that the kiss might make a difference. He forgot all about Bright back home. Bright, who thought he was asleep in his hotel room. Bright, whom he planned to propose to when he got home. Bright, who didn't deserve to come in second, but knew she was. Jency pulled away, her hand on the car door. "I should go," she said. On the radio, Death Cab for Cutie sang about peeling freckles from summer skin. He wanted to stop her from leaving, but he sat motionless, listening to the song on the radio and the gentle hiss of the heat from the vents of the rented car. Neither of them said a word. He could feel her wanting him to stop her, to pull her toward him, away from the door. If he asked, she would go with him to his hotel, and he could have her just once more. "It was good to see you," he made himself say instead. "You too," she said, her voice gone stiff. "I'm going to ask Brett to marry me," he told her, because that was what he had come there to say. She nodded and blinked away tears. "Congratulations," she said. "So I should?" he asked her. He wanted her permission. He wanted her to stop him. She turned to him and gave him a resigned, sad smile. "Yes," she said. He could not recall how the night ended beyond that, beyond her yes that freed him to marry Bright, to make this life he was living now. If Jency had said anything different, he would not have come back to Bright. He would never have proposed. It would have been the worst mistake he'd ever made, but he would have made it willingly if it meant he got another chance with the girl he loved first. In the end, it was Bright who loved him best. It was Bright he was meant for. It had taken him far too long to come to terms with that, and he'd made so many mistakes along the way. He saw how his mistakes had led to hers. She'd tried so hard to make their life perfect, to make him happy, and he'd taken it all for granted. He walked into Christopher's room, thinking of what she'd done and what he'd done, and finding it hard to distinguish what was worse. He looked down at the boy he could not give her, and thought of all the other things he had not given her. He had not loved her the way she deserved, but he could start to. He would not tell her what he'd done in New York. It would be too much for her. But he could forgive her, and maybe in doing so, it would be like she was also forgiving him. He wanted to take her in his arms and absolve all their secrets. He would do anything to make it right with his wife, who was, it turned out, the only one for him. Bright. Myrtle Honeycutt was confused when Bright showed up so late, asking for the dog, but thankfully the old woman turned over the leash without too many questions. Rigby gave her an excuse to walk, to move instead of sit, to feel the blood rush through her veins for a reason other than shame and fear. Rigby pranced along beside her, seeming to enjoy the fact that she didn't have the leash so tight today. She didn't care how far he wandered tonight. Her jaw continued to quiver, no matter how much she tried to steel it. She refused to give in to tears, and gave herself a good scolding instead. Her feet beating out a rhythm in time with the steady stream of harsh words she had for herself. She'd made this mess. She deserved everything that was happening. She'd been a liar and a manipulator. She'd hurt the people she loved most. She had to face the music. She would lose everything, and that was what she deserved. She was a horrible person who'd done a terrible thing. She reached Zell's house and stopped, looking in at the warm lights glowing in the gathering darkness, the house like a beacon. She moved up the driveway toward it, tugging Rigby along with her, thinking that perhaps Zell would open her door and welcome her in. She might even make her hot chocolate. That seemed like something Zell would do. Bright could go to the door with the pretense that she was just passing by and wanted to tell her she was sorry she hadn't seen her at the pool recently. When Cutter had nearly drowned, Zell had soothed Kaylee when everyone else was too afraid to speak. She'd been the one who knew what to do. That day felt like a lifetime ago. She'd been a different person then, still believing she could hide the truth forever and run from it if she had to. She thought of Zell and Kaylee, of Jency and Lance. Not one of them who'd gathered around that crying girl as the ambulance wailed its way out of the pool parking lot were the same people they were then. She walked slowly toward the door and took a deep breath before raising her hand to knock, tempted in that second to turn around. She thought about what Lance had told her about Ty, how Zell was too ashamed to show her face. She felt a kinship with the older woman. She exhaled and knocked anyway. Rigby watched with a curious look. It was Kaylee who opened the door, her eyes widening when she saw who was there. She peered past Bright. "Is Christopher with you?" She knelt down and petted Rigby. Bright smiled and shook her head. "No, he's at home in bed, but I'll bring him by another time." Kaylee gave a despondent shrug and said, "I'll be gone by then." She dropped her hand from Rigby's head. "Well, you'll still be in the neighborhood." Bright gave her a smile that she hoped looked encouraging. She looked past Kaylee to see if she could spot Zell. Kaylee noticed her looking and waved her in. Rigby trotted on in with no hesitation, partly because the house smelled so delicious, Bright guessed. "I'll go get Zell." Bright watched the girl disappear up the steps, her shoulders stooped and her head down. Bright took a seat at the kitchen table to wait, wondering idly as she did why Kaylee didn't seem happy about going home. Most children, she would guess, would want to go back home. She'd often wondered, as Kaylee's brief stay stretched into a long one, why it had been that way. But looking around at Zell's home, she understood better why she wouldn't want to leave. Rigby flopped at her feet and closed his eyes. She heard the uneven gait of Zell limping into the room. Zell paused as their eyes met, then proceeded to the table. She pulled out the chair across from Bright and sat down. Kaylee tromped loudly into the kitchen and retrieved a mason jar from underneath the sink. She held it aloft.
"I'm going outside to catch lightning bugs with Lila and Alec," she informed Zell.
She hustled out the door without waiting for the okay from Zell. The two of them watched her go, grateful, Bright thought, for the distraction.
"So she's really going home?"
Bright asked. Zell nodded, looking bereft.
"Tomorrow."
"I'm sorry for interrupting your last night together," Bright said.
Zell waved her words away. I cooked her favorite meal. Later, we're going to watch a movie. Stay up late. Zell shrugged. To be honest, I'm glad for the distraction. It was feeling a little maudlin around here. Her grin was just a flash before she narrowed her eyes at Bright. So, what can I do for you?
I was just walking Rigby and saw your lights on, and I wanted to say that I've missed seeing you up at the pool, and I hope everything's okay.
It will be, Zell said. She folded her hands and studied Bright. It always is.
You really believe that?
Bright asked, hearing the waver in her voice. I do. You don't?
Not tonight, Bright said.
The two women looked at each other, an understanding passing between them. I'm all ears, Zell said, then stood up. But first I'm going to pour us some wine, and you better start talking.
Bright cleared her throat and began her story, watching her neighbor stump over to the refrigerator to get the wine. She began to speak, letting her words flow like the golden liquid that poured into the glasses, words that had been bottled up for far too long. Kaylee. I stood outside with the mason jar in my hand and the lightning bugs flying around, uncaught. For a while I just watched them zing past me, their little bellies glowing as they gathered in the cluster of trees toward the back of Zell's yard. From where I stood, I could see inside Zell's house, right into her kitchen. Zell was talking to Christopher's mom at the kitchen table, but they didn't see me. They were drinking wine and looked really serious, nodding a lot, their mouths in straight lines across their faces. I knew better than to go back in and interrupt them. I looked over at the house next door. Lila and Alec weren't home. Ever since their mom showed back up, they were always off doing stuff with her. Zell told me to give them time, but I didn't have time. Everyone said I'd still be in the neighborhood, and nothing had to change. But I knew that sometimes things just changed, and there was nothing you could do to stop it from happening. That was what the whole summer had been about, if you thought about it. All around us, things had changed, and changed again. Since there was nothing better to do, I walked toward the front yard just to see something other than lightning bugs. At least in the front yard, I could sit in my favorite spot by the pond and watch cars go by, when a car did come by. In this neighborhood, it wasn't often that even happened. I put the empty mason jar on the grass and rested my chin on my knees, listening to the sounds of the nighttime all around. I tried to look up at the moon, but it was covered up by clouds. Mr. Doyle's house was right in front of me, but I couldn't look at it. Since the kiss had happened, I had thought of little else besides his tongue filling my mouth, about to choke me to death, his coffee breath nearly making me gag. He told me not to tell anyone what happened, and I didn't intend to. It was too embarrassing, and there was no one to tell anyway. Zell would overreact, and my mom didn't need anything else to deal with. Sometimes I thought of warning Lila not to ever go to his house, but I had a feeling Mr. Doyle wouldn't mess with her, because he'd be afraid of her dad finding out and kicking his butt. I'd watched his house and thought of his mother dead in the ground and the pond he was building, even though she'd never see it now. I thought of how we'd worked to finish his pond and the curtain I saw move, how that nagged at me almost as much as the kiss, though I couldn't say why. No matter how much I told myself it was just my mind playing tricks on me, the heat getting to me, I kept seeing the curtain move and the lock on the basement door. One after the other, like a movie playing in my mind on repeat. Sitting there thinking about it all, I got an idea. His car wasn't in the driveway, and I knew he'd gone over to play poker at a friend's house because I heard him talk to him on his cell phone when we were working on the pond. I had seen him whistle his way to the car hours earlier, hating him with all the hate in me. The lights were out, except for a faint blue glow coming from Jesse's room. That meant he was playing one of his video games, so he would be distracted. If I hurried,
I could do some spying before he came back. Before I knew it, I was up on my feet and heading toward the house, feeling a bravery I'd never felt in the light of day. I crept closer and closer, knowing no one could see me. I knew a lot of folks are afraid of the dark, but I learned something important and true that night. Sometimes darkness can work to your advantage. I stood on his patio, just looking at the locked sliding glass door I couldn't possibly get into, wondering what had made that curtain move and whether I'd be brave enough to go in there if I could figure out a way to get in. I had no key and no idea how to pick the lock. There was a small rectangular window that led into the basement, but there was no way I was going to fit through it. I looked around for another way to get in, but saw nothing. My body felt cold and hot all at once. My heart moved into my throat, and I thought about hightailing it back to Zell's. I could run away and not look back. I could leave in the morning and pretend I'd never gotten this close. I could let whatever was weird about Mr. Doyle's house stay weird and spend the rest of my life trying to forget what he did. I thought of the way he looked at me after he kissed me, how he gave me that smile at the same time his eyes went flat in his head, like his mouth and eyes weren't connected to the same brain. And I got so angry I wanted to hit him, to pound my fists into him until it hurt. I spied my reflection in that glass door, saw my puny little self that couldn't hurt a grown man, no matter how much I wanted to. Then I remembered the river rocks we'd used to make the border of the pond, and I got an idea. If I got in trouble, well, what did I have to lose? I would only have to deal with the fallout for so long before I went home. Zell didn't like Mr. Doyle anyway. I smiled and walked over to pick up the biggest, heaviest rock I could find. I lugged it over to stand in front of the sliding glass door again, watching the reflection in the glass, someone I wasn't sure I knew anymore. The rock was so heavy I had to hold it like I used to take granny shots at the basketball goal in gym class. I kept my eye on the glass door and got ready to take a granny shot of a different sort. I was about to let the rock fly when I heard a car on the street. The engine sounded like it was slowing down, maybe even fixing to turn into Mr. Doyle's driveway. I laid the rock down and rushed over to peer around the side of the house. I watched as a big SUV pulled up across the street in front of Alec and Lila's house. I could see that it was Jency, idling there at the curb, just staring at the house. The windows were rolled down, and I could hear her radio playing some sad love song. She kept sitting there, without noticing me at all, so I went back to what I was there to do, hefting the rock back into position, my eyes once again leveled at the intended target. I imagined how loud the glass would sound as it shattered, the mess it would make. I feared Jesse running out and catching me, Mr. Doyle coming home to find me before I could get away. I tried not to think about what might be behind that curtain. Maybe it would be something I didn't want to let loose. But I couldn't let any of that stop me. I was there to do something, and though I didn't really understand it, I had to see it through. As I went to raise my arms, it felt as if another set of arms came underneath mine, making me 10 times stronger and 10 times braver than I'd ever been. I looked at the glass, and with every ounce of strength I had, I hurled the rock into the window, these mysterious arms helping it go faster and harder than I ever could have on my own. I covered my ears as the sound of breaking glass drowned out the chorus of crickets, cicadas, and tree frogs I'd just been listening to over in Zell's yard. When the noise died out, I took in the scene I'd created, my heart going a mile a minute. The glass scattered across the patio looked for all the world like a million diamonds shining in the moonlight. It took my breath away, but not nearly as much as the face that appeared in the hole the rock had made. It was a face I'd seen about 100 times, the face that had been on TV and posters and billboards nearly everywhere we'd gone that summer. "Have you seen me?" the posters asked. And now I had. Jency hadn't meant to stay outside Lance's house as long as she had. She'd intended to just drive by to see if his car was in the driveway. The irony wasn't lost on her. the stalked somehow becoming the stalker. But the music on the radio had been perfect, one song lapsing into the next, the night air like a caress on her bare arms through the open window. Her parents had taken the girls out to a movie, and she had nowhere else to be. She'd stopped frequenting the hideout when Lance came into her life. It had been a normal night in the neighborhood, one like any other, except on this night she'd given in to the urge to venture over to the last place she'd been truly happy in a long time. She didn't blame Deborah for returning. She just wished she'd come back sooner, preferably before she'd had the chance to fall in love with the woman's husband. She wondered if this summer had just been a step out of time, if Sycamore Glen had simply been their own version of Camelot. She thought of Lance's stupid joke about being named after Lancelot, how she'd believed him for a moment, how gullible she'd been. She pounded her palm into the steering wheel a few times. She'd been so stupid. She thought she heard something, a disturbance of some sort, and turned down the radio to listen closer. She needed to get out of there and was about to pull away when the sound of 4 feet thundering across the road stopped her. She looked toward the noise to see 2 girls running as fast as their little feet could carry them. Curious, she emerged from her car. "Girls?" she called out, looking back to see where they'd come from. Someone came out of Mr. Doyle's house, a dark figure on the porch. Danger crackled in the air. Jency started to follow the girls up the driveway. They disappeared into Zell's house, and she looked back to see that the figure was gone. Lance's car pulled into his driveway, and she stepped into the shadows, hiding uselessly. She knew he'd seen her car parked in front of his house, but the last thing she wanted to do was face him. She didn't want to see the happy, reunited family emerge from the car. She turned away and cursed herself for ending up here, in this place she no longer belonged. She would take the job in Virginia. She would start over. Again. She heard 3 car doors slam and looked over, waiting for the sound of the 4th door. But only 3 people stood in the driveway, their eyes turned toward Zell's house. They didn't see Jency, because they were looking at Zell on her stoop, yelling for them to come and help. Zell. When Kaylee came bursting through the back door, she wasn't alone. Zell looked up from her conversation with Bright, her mind struggling to process what was happening. She'd been so wrapped up in Bright's story she'd, and she was ashamed of this, forgotten all about the girl in her care. Now there were 2 girls in her kitchen, one of them as familiar as her own reflection, the other vaguely so. She rose from her chair and gripped the table, blinking at them, her mouth working to find words as 1,000,000 questions came to mind. She was trying to place the dirty, disheveled child with Kaylee. She'd seen her somewhere before. The child spoke, her breathing heavy, her eyes confused and darting. I'm Hannah. She paused. Sumner. I've been kept in that house for... She looked to Kaylee, who nodded. 94 days. She turned and pointed at James's house, her hand quivering as she lifted it. Zell took in the snarled, matted hair, the hollowed-out eyes, the skinny frame underneath a dirty man's undershirt. Blood dripped from a gash in her arm. Improbably, her nails were painted a garish purple that stood out against her pale, pale skin. Kaylee rushed forward and grabbed Zell's phone from the charger, thrusting it into her hand. "Call the police, Zell!" she hollered. "Call them now before he comes over here!" Next door, a car pulled up in the driveway, scaring them all half to death. Bright leaped up, tugged the girls farther into the kitchen, and slammed the door behind them, twisting the lock. She turned to Zell, panic on her face, the story she'd been telling all but forgotten. There were some things more important than the mess of their own lives. Zell looked at the house next door, as had been her habit for so long. She saw Lance and his 2 children standing there. But not Deborah. She walked over and unlocked the door, stuck her head out and waved Lance over. "Hurry!" she yelled. "We need your help!" Then she dialed 911, amazed at how steady her fingers were as she pressed the numbers. When Zell spotted Lance in the yard after Kaylee and Hannah went whizzing away in the ambulance, she figured she should be a few minutes late getting over to the hospital. It'd be best to let Kaylee's mom be the first one to arrive, leaving her with good time to speak to Lance. She walked over to him and tapped him on the shoulder. He turned to her, his eyes still wide with shock.
"Thank you," she said, "for your help in there."
Lance shrugged.
"I don't know what I did. You were the hero."
"No, Kaylee's the hero,"
he nodded.
"That she is."
His eyes strayed back to the scene across the street.
"I asked Deborah to leave," he said, addressing Deborah's absence without provocation.
"I tried to make it work, but there was just something." He waved his hand in the air, dismissing it.
"What do you mean? There was something?"
she pressed, easing the conversation in the direction she needed it to go. He gave a little laugh.
"Nothing. It's not worth going into."
She raised her eyebrows.
"Maybe it is."
Now it was his turn to raise his eyebrows.
"Like how?"
She crossed her arms.
"Why'd she tell you she left?"
He hung his head, ashamed.
"She said I wasn't supportive. That she lost all this weight and I didn't appreciate it. That she was depressed and I didn't even notice. She said I did emotional damage, and I'm sure I did. She had to go away to work out her feelings about it all, to decide if she wanted to continue in the marriage."
He was a good guy, probably one of the best, and that bitch had convinced him he'd done this.
She wanted to wring Deborah's neck.
Zell shook her head.
"She was lying."
His eyes widened, telling her she should press on. She was eager to be done with her confession, to finally get off her chest the weight she'd been carrying for far too long.
"Well, you know she and I became running partners," he nodded, "and we ended up becoming..."
She weighed the next word before saying it.
"Friends."
She took a deep breath and noticed he'd turned his face away again, watching the house across the street as it became a crime scene.
"She started telling me things, and mostly because she knew I was right next door and would see him coming and going, she told me when she started having an affair. At first I was just looking out for them, and then I just started watching them together."
His neck jerked as he whipped his head back in her direction.
"I'm not proud of it."
She made herself meet his eyes when all she wanted to do was look at the ground.
"Wait, you're telling me you spied on my wife and her lover?"
She saw the disgust on his face, knew he was thinking about what Ty had done, how maybe voyeurism ran in the family. It was nothing she hadn't thought of herself. Shame colored her face as she answered him.
"I would sneak into your backyard and watch them have lunch at your kitchen table, sit and talk on your couch," she sniffed. "I watched it go from innocent to not so innocent, and I should have walked away, but it became a compulsion. I was lonely and bored and nosy."
He swallowed, and when he went to speak, his voice was ragged.
"And they were..."
He didn't need to finish the sentence. She nodded.
"One day he happened to look up and he saw me. I tried to duck out of the way, but it was too late. I started to run away, but it had rained earlier and I slipped and fell, and that's when I hurt my knee. Deborah came outside, found me rolling around in the mud, holding my knee. She looked at me and she knew. She knew what I'd been doing and what I'd seen."
Zell stopped talking for a moment, letting her words sink in. Across the street, police personnel were erecting a large portable floodlight.
"She left the next day."
She ducked her head.
"I just thought you should know. I talked to her the other day, and she told me she wasn't going to tell you, and that I shouldn't, or everyone would know what I'd done."
She held her hands up.
"But I think she knew I was going to tell you, and it's time I did. I don't care if everyone knows. I wouldn't blame you if you never spoke to me again."
They were silent for a few minutes. Lance opened his mouth as if to speak, and then seemed to think better of it. Zell watched him walk away, gave him the space and time to absorb all that she had said. She turned back to watch the action across the street, and waited to feel the good feelings she'd imagined her confession would bring. Jency. The police moved like bees around a hive, encircling James Doyle's house. Lance was nearby talking to Zell, who was also standing on her front lawn to watch the scene. She looked around, but didn't see Bright anywhere. One by one, the media arrived, leaping from their cars to be the first on the scene, two of them actually sprinting across the yard, racing each other. It would have been comical if there was a different reason for their presence. Though it was now fully dark, the place was lit up like midday. Jency had watched several policemen lead a confused and frightened Jesse from the home, looking for all the world like he was the one being arrested, his eyes darting around, taking it all in, or trying to. Alone and terrified, she'd seen him run out of the house after Kaylee had smashed the glass, then back inside. She'd felt sorry for him, but kept her distance. She was just another stranger to him, even if once upon a time she'd ridden the school bus with him, never making eye contact, avoiding the weird guy from her neighborhood. Though it was too late, she wished she'd been the kind of girl who would have been nice to Jesse. Maybe if she had, she could have crossed the yard, walked beside him, helped him somehow understand what was happening. She wondered where he'd spend the night. She shook her head. First his mother's loss, now this. Hannah had also been removed from the scene, taken away in an ambulance moments after the authorities arrived. This time, Kaylee had been allowed in the ambulance, mostly because Hannah Sumner had flipped out about getting in until they said she could have Kaylee with her. Jency watched as Kaylee bravely climbed into the ambulance and perched on the side of the stretcher, taking the girl's hand with a resolute look on her face, looking far older than her years. Hannah was slipping into shock, her mind protecting her from reality. Jency thought of the times she'd seen that face on TV this summer, the times she'd changed the channel so her girls didn't see it, believing that if you didn't look directly at it, you could pretend it wasn't there. She didn't like to think of the many times she'd spent the night at Lance's, steps away from a child's endless nightmare. She tried not to think of Hannah's parents seeing her again, imagining their simultaneous joy and terror. Parents were supposed to be the ones to make the nightmares go away. So far, there'd been no sign of James. Cops were coming and going in their attempt to locate and arrest him. She supposed she was waiting for news of his arrest, hungry for some sense of justice. She hoped some cop got in a few good kidney punches once the cuffs were on. Ordinarily, she was opposed to violence, but tonight her blood boiled. She thought of being a frightened young girl herself, never held prisoner, except in her own mind. She looked behind her at the house where the person who'd terrified her, who'd made her flee, had lived. It was over now. She never had to worry about someone threatening her, never had to look over her shoulder again. She glanced over and caught Lance watching her. Slowly, meekly, she raised her hand in greeting, relieved when he said something to Zell, and ambled over in response. She longed to reach out to him, to feel his strong arms make her feel safe, like that night after they learned about Ty. Not knowing where Deborah was or why Deborah wasn't there, she kept silent, kept her distance. For a few minutes, he stood wordlessly beside her as they both took in the scene, disbelief floating in the air between them. Other disbelieving neighbors began trickling out of their houses as word spread, needing to see this with their own eyes. They formed clusters in Lance's and Zell's yards, everyone grappling for a clear view, angling for the latest news. She needed to call her mom, let her know she was okay. They'd be home from the movies by now, would no doubt hear and be concerned. She thought of her mother's face as she'd said goodbye to her before she'd left for that college so far from home. She could see now that her mother had been terrified, but worked to keep her from seeing it. When she got home, She would thank them for making sure she was safe by letting her go. If the tables were turned, she wasn't sure she could have done the same. Tears began to fall, but she made no motion to wipe them away, lest she call attention to herself. This night shouldn't be about sadness. Jency was free, and so was that little girl. Lance stepped closer. He put his arm around her and drew her into him, closing the distance between them. And then, ever so gently, he reached up and wiped her tears away. She hadn't drawn attention to her tears, but he'd seen them anyway. She began to cry harder, and he pulled her in, surrounding her with love. Right. Thankfully, Myrtle Honeycutt was still up watching a Braves game when Bright brought Rigby back.
"Did you hear all the commotion out there?"
the old woman asked as she opened the door, her eyes wide and darting around.
"You got any idea what's going on?"
Bright patted Myrtle's shoulder, assuring her that everything was fine. She helped her settle in for the night and watched to make sure she locked the door behind her. Still keyed up from the events of the night, she came home to a darkened house. She worried that Everett had done exactly what she'd feared he would do since the day they got together. But would he take their son? The word caught in her throat. There. He would not take Christopher, because he was not his son, and the knowledge of that might have been the final straw. She resumed her internal lecture from before. She'd done this to herself, and she deserved everything that came to her. Still, she called out into the darkness, "Everett?" Her voice a loud, urgent whisper. She wanted to tell him what had happened that night, all that she'd witnessed at Zell's house. She thought of the terrified little girls in Zell's kitchen, the flashing lights of the police cars throwing red and blue patterns against the neighboring houses, the onslaught of reporters. She'd snuck away while everyone was distracted. Hannah's discovery was a big story, but she had an unfolding drama of her own to sort out. Everett didn't answer her, so she moved quickly toward Christopher's room, not bothering to turn on the lights as she went. She knew this house in her sleep, could feel her way through the darkness without bumping into furniture or walls. The knot in her throat grew as she thought about leaving it. There was no way she could afford to keep it on her own. All she'd ever wanted was to live in this neighborhood with her own family one day. Her dreams had been relatively small, yet still too big for her to attain. Christopher's door was open, the nightlight they kept lit for him spilling the tiniest bit of light into the hall. She paused in the doorway when she saw Everett already there, standing beside his toddler bed, Gulliver looking down at the Lilliputian. She stood stone still, taking in the scene as she waited for the knot in her throat to dissolve. After a few moments, she realized she was holding her breath, and she exhaled. When she did, Everett turned around and saw her. In the darkness, she could barely make out his face, yet she knew instinctively he'd been crying. Just as instinctively, she moved toward him, wanting to hold him, to dry his tears, to make everything okay for him just like she'd always been compelled to do. But of course that instinct had gotten them where they were today. She kept her arms at her sides and willed herself not to reach for him. "I thought you were gone," she whispered. He shook his head, and there was silence for a few more seconds.
"I thought about it," he finally said. "I even came in here to say goodbye, to tell him I was sorry."
He went quiet, and she fought the urge to tell him to keep talking. The words were on her lips. "You have nothing to be sorry for." But she held them in, biting on her bottom lip to refrain from speaking.
"But I couldn't say it. I couldn't tell him goodbye."
He turned to look at her again, and she could hear the tears in the thickness of his voice. "He's so beautiful." She nodded as her own eyes filled with tears. "Yes," she said. Below them, Christopher threw his arms over his head, his chin pointed toward the headboard, his little elephant tucked close to him, moonlight highlighting the features she'd searched a thousand times for proof or denial of his parentage.
Some days she could see Trent in him as clear as day. Other days she saw Everett because she wanted to. When he was born, Everett's mother had marched into the hospital room, clasped her hands to her chest, and exclaimed, "He looks just like his daddy!" Wright had foolishly hoped that meant she was home free, but she had never truly been home free again. Everett motioned for her to follow him out into the hall, and with one last glance at Christopher, she did. What she'd done was stupid, but her son's existence was the opposite of regrettable. She would spend the rest of her life caught in that paradox. She pulled Christopher's door nearly closed, leaving just a crack between the frame and the door itself, the way she herself had slept as a child. She followed Everett across the hall and into their bedroom, pausing at the threshold again. He slumped into the overstuffed chair she'd long ago stuck in the corner of the room when her mom was getting rid of it. It had become a repository for discarded items of clothing draped across the back, his and hers, that neither of them ever bothered to look through unless they needed something in particular. She was pretty sure her coat and his thick flannel shirt were still there from winter, waiting to be discovered. She couldn't look at him sitting there, his head in his hands. Her eyes moved over to their bed, just for somewhere else to look. She wished it was like any other night, and she could just crawl into it, could feel Everett's steady presence beside her, have him tease her with his ongoing accusation that she snored. The little things were what she'd miss. She heard him inhale and steeled herself for whatever he was going to say.
"Do you have feelings for him? Do you want him in Christopher's life? Is that why you went to see him?"
The words stunned her. "No," she said, the objection ringing in the silent room. "Nothing like that. She was going to say that she truly went there to talk to him about a job. But as she met his eyes, she knew he saw through that, probably faster than she had. Her voice was softer as she went on to explain. "You wanted another baby so much, and I knew it wasn't going to happen. And then I found his business card. I'd kept it because..." She made herself look at his eyes. "Well, I kept it just in case there was ever something genetic that came up." They blinked at each other for a moment, absorbing the weight of all she'd kept hidden from him. "And when I saw it again, it just made me think about seeing him again. You kept talking about another baby, and I was feeling pressured to finally tell you the truth, and I guess I wanted to try to remember what could have possibly made me think it was the answer." There was more silence, more broken gazes. She spoke again to fill the silence, to somehow utter the words that would make him understand. "I wanted to tell you since the moment it happened. I wanted to look you in the eye and say, we are never having children of our own, so let's figure out how to deal with it." As she spoke, she moved toward him, her steps deliberate and certain. She would wrap her arms around him, and if he pulled away, he would be the one to pull away. But she wasn't going to pull away anymore. She would love him until the last second she had to love him. And if she lost him anyway, well, at least she'd made the most of the time she had with him. She stopped when she got close to him, her arms hanging limply at her sides. "But then I would see you with him, and the two of you would be laughing and talking about what you were going to work on in the yard, or what his favorite kind of dinosaur is, and I would think, how can I possibly wreck this? Why would anyone want to wreck this?" A tear escaped the corner of her eye and traveled the length of her cheek. She didn't bother to wipe it away. It fell off the edge of her face and disappeared into the carpet. "I love him," Everett said, his choked voice barely more than a whisper. "Of course you do. He's my son." She felt some of the tension she'd been holding in her body whoosh out with those three words. "Yes," she said. "It'll take a long time to let it sink in that he's not, technically." She bristled, but kept quiet. "And he doesn't know anything?" This was a different he, but Bright knew who Everett meant,
She shook her head.
Nothing.
Everett reached up and took her hands, lacing his fingers in hers. She looked at him, surprise evident on her face. But on his face, she saw a look she couldn't ever remember seeing. It was a hard look, a determined look, his jaw like steel, pulsing.
Did he make a play for you when you were with him today?
Her heart picked up speed. She swallowed as she determined how to answer. Truth. She had promised herself she would tell the truth from now on.
Sort of. I think he thought perhaps what happened before could happen again. He wanted me to stay for dinner.
And it would have happened again, if it had happened.
He pointed at her stomach.
I'm right, aren't I?
She nodded. Of course, she'd thought of the timing, how easy it would be, on one level, to let it happen again. He let go of her hands, and for one desperate moment, she feared she'd given him the wrong answer. But then she saw him glance over at the clock, and she knew. They looked at each other, and for a few moments neither of them spoke, as, without words, each took in what was happening.
I can't give you a child, he said.
I know.
Ever.
He leaned over as he said it, as if he'd been punched.
It's hard to say that out loud.
She watched as he righted himself to a standing position, trying not to get ahead of what he was saying.
After you left, I thought about it and... We can't have any more kids.
He exhaled loudly.
We'll have to either adopt or get a donor. And if we do that, then that child will be different from Christopher. It'll be totally obvious. To him. To everyone.
Yes, she said.
She was doing her best to keep her knees from giving out. Her head thrummed, and Everett's face swam a little before her eyes. He took a deep breath, held it, and exhaled.
I don't want different. I don't want anyone to ever know, most of all him. I'd do anything to protect him from ever finding out that I'm not his real father, because I am.
Her eyes filled with tears and she closed them briefly, then opened them to find Everett looking back at her. She'd gone to the hotel to see if she could perpetuate the illusion she'd created, but she'd lost her nerve because it would only be another lie piled on top of the festering heap she'd created. She opened her mouth to speak, but no words would come.
If I could pick out any little boy to be my own, I'd pick him.
He reached for her hands again and squeezed them hard.
I want you to know that. I need you to know that.
She willed herself not to cry, even as more tears leaked from her eyes. Later she would fall apart. Now something was happening that could not occur if she gave in to her emotions. She remembered the robotic feeling from the night she'd made Christopher, how she'd so easily exchanged her warm flesh for cold metal, her skin barely registering the contact as he moved over and inside her. In her head, she heard that damn heart song playing on an endless loop. Whatever it couldn't give her was the one little thing he could. Everett swallowed, his Adam's apple bobbing inside his throat. And she thought for the millionth time what a tragedy it was that this man, this handsome, charming, kind man, could never reproduce himself.
How drunk do you think he is by now?
He asked. His breathing pattern had changed. He sounded like he did after he'd been lifting weights.
He was well on his way when I left at 5. He might even be passed out by now. Or with someone else, or...
Shh! He said. He rested his finger on her lips for the briefest of seconds, and then reached into the pocket of her shorts to retrieve her cell phone. He held it out to her.
Yes?
He raised his eyebrows, shaking the phone the slightest bit. She took the phone from his hand, felt his gaze rest on her, and in it his assumption that she would do this thing. But would it be any easier with his complicity?
She saw them in her mind, her two beautiful children, a perfect matched set. It was so tempting to perpetuate what she'd created and guarded for so long. It was right there if she wanted it, and all it would take is one more meaningless night. But of course, it wasn't meaningless. That one night held more meaning than nearly any other before or since. It divided and defined, haunted and hindered, but no more. She exhaled, the whoosh of air loud in the silent room. She cupped his chin in her hands and gave him the barest hint of a smile. "Now," she said, and handed him back the phone. Zell. John honked the horn in the driveway, and Zell hurried outside to see the truck. He climbed out and swept his arm past the bed, loaded down with their surprise for Kaylee and her family. She came over to stand beside him, rested her head on his shoulder. "You're a good man, John Boyette," she said. "You're a persistent wife, Zell Boyette," he quipped. He chuckled and shook his head. "I don't know how you get me into these things." She elbowed him. "You wanted to do this as much as I did. That child grew on you this summer." "That she did." He elbowed her back and raised his eyebrows. "She also got you out of going with the Robinsons to Lake Lure." She waved her hand in the air, refusing to admit just how true that was. "She needed us a lot more than Clay and Althea did." He touched his finger to her nose, gave her that look that told her he was wise to her ways. "And you needed her." She smiled, holding her hands up in mock surrender. "Maybe just a little." "You know," he said, "I've been thinking." She laughed. "Oh, no. No, I'm serious. I think you should go back to teaching somehow this fall. Sunday school, or maybe substituting again. Something where you can work with kids. You're good at it." "Yeah, I was thinking about calling around, seeing if there are some schools that might need help with beautifying their grounds, or even doing the wildlife habitat program. That's how Kaylee knew about it. They did it at one of her schools. So, seeing as how I know what to do now, I thought maybe I could put that hard-earned knowledge to use." He nodded, smiled. "I like it." "Yeah," she said. "Me too." He clapped his hands together. "You're ready to go? It's only gonna get hotter, so we might as well get started." "Sure. I just need to make one quick phone call before we go. Whoever it is, you're probably gonna see them there," he groused. She paused, thought of the promise she'd made to herself. She couldn't go love on someone else's child unless she'd done the same for her own. Her son was hurting, but she'd been too wrapped up in her own shame to reach out to him. She couldn't spend one more day with him thinking he'd failed her, when the truth was, he was just like her. "It's Ty," she said. His smile widened. "That's my girl." He pointed at Lance's house. "I'll just go see if Lance remembered his hedge clippers." She nodded and went back inside. She picked up the phone, dialed the number, and listened as, on the other end, it began to ring. Kaylee. 2 days after I got home, they all showed up. Zell and Mr. John, Jency and Lance with Lila, Alec, Pilar, and Zara, all whooping and hollering as they chased each other around in that terrible bare yard of our eyesore house. Brat came, too, and brought her husband, Everett, who hadn't been around a whole lot that summer, but who was very nice. They left Christopher with his grandmother, though, because they said they didn't want him underfoot. They had work to do, they said. With big smiles on their faces, they pointed to a pickup truck parked in our driveway. It was filled with bushes and flowers and even a small tree. Zell came and stood beside me as I took it all in. "Every gardener should have a garden of her own," she said. "Thank you," I said,
but I barely had a voice to say it with. She shrugged.
We all helped.
But I knew it was mainly her idea. She was the only one who knew how much this would mean to me. The other night, I said, I never really got to say goodbye with everything that